Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. The father of all Prajapatis, Brahma, thus seeing all his Prajapati sons speaking in that way, became very ashamed and at once gave up the body he had accepted. Later that body appeared in all directions as the dangerous fog in darkness. Purport. The best way to compensate for one's sinful acts is to give up one's body at once. And Brahma, the leader of the living entities, showed this by his personal example. Brahma has a fabulous duration of life, but he was obliged to give up his body due to his grievous sin, even though he had merely contemplated it in his mind, without having actually done it. This is a lesson for the living entities, showing how sinful an act it is to indulge in unrestricted sex life. Even to think of abominable sex life is sinful. And to compensate for such sinful acts, one has to give up his body. In other words, one's duration of life, blessings, opulence, etc., are decreased by sinful acts. And the most dangerous type of sinful act is unrestricted sex. Ignorance is the cause of sinful life, or sinful life is the cause of gross ignorance. The feature of ignorance is darkness or fog. Darkness or fog still covers the whole universe, and the sun is the only counteracting principle. One who takes shelter of the Lord, the perpetual light, has no fear of being annihilated in the darkness of fog or ignorance. Om Adnyanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namahum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this particular canto, third canto, describes the secondary creation. And in the secondary creation, you have Brahma creating the universe. Brahma is the first being. And the last time I was here, I spoke on verse number 3. And we saw that the first thing that Brahma creates is, as Prabhupada calls it, nescience or darkness. And we were describing in that class that if you go to a movie theater and if you have to be under the illusion of finding yourself connected with the characters on the screen, the very first thing that happens is that the lights go off. This darkness. Because darkness brings forgetfulness of our real position. So Brahma first creates darkness, ignorance, and death. By creating death, he makes a statement that everything in this world is temporary. Everything has a use-by date. And once that darkness is created, Brahma doesn't feel very good. He feels he's created something which is probably not so nice, as Srila Prabhupada says. So what does he do? he starts meditating on the Lord. And from his meditation, from Brahma's meditation, appears four Kumaras. The four Kumaras represent four aspects of knowledge. We described all this in the last class, I will not repeat. But the four Kumaras have been created for one specific purpose. In fact, Brahma's very existence is for one specific purpose. In fact, if we understand the third canto and reflect on it deeply, we understand that just like Brahma and just like the Prajapatis and just like the Devatas and the Rishis and the Manus, each and every one of us is created for a purpose. And the purpose needs to be fulfilled. So Brahma wanted to create for the purpose of expanding the universe. So he creates these four little boys. But they are born from the deliberation of Brahma. Every act, every thought, every movement of Brahma is a created being. We see, for example, is it in the ninth canto, we see that Ikshvaku, who is the sun god, he is mentioned in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Ikshvaku, how was he created? Anyone? He appeared from Brahma when Brahma had a sneeze. So Brahma, he sneezed, Ikshvaku. And that's Ikshvaku. So even his sneeze becomes a created being. And Ikshvaku was in charge of the sun. So if you, it's not a nice bright day today, but if you were to look at the sun, I wouldn't recommend you to look at the sun with your naked eye, but if you did try to look at the sun, you will sneeze. And Ikshvaku is in charge of the sun. So every time you sneeze, it reminds you, oh, I'm a created being, I'm Brahma's son. So everything from Brahma, every thought, every movement, is a created being. So we have the four Kumaras. They are created from the meditation of Brahma when Brahma meditated on Vasudev. Of course, the created beings take up the quality of the consciousness that Brahma possessed. And just like Ikshvaku, who's the sun god, even now if you look at the sun, you sneeze, because that was the quality that's there. Somehow it's there inherent. Similarly, the quality of being absolutely attracted to the Lord, constantly meditating on him, was inherent in the four Kumaras. It reminds me, once I was with Kripa Mahaprabhu and he was talking about his children and one particular of the three, and he said, I'm not going to reveal who that is, but I'll say, he said, this particular child is too Krishna conscious. We were too Krishna conscious when she was born. Oops, I revealed she. Okay. That particular child. And he was very fondly speaking of that particular child. And I was thinking, yes, you know, when we have a certain state of consciousness that passes on. So because the four Kumaras were seemingly produced for the purpose of expanding, but because they had the absorption of the Lord, They said, "My dear father, we will not follow your instruction. We do not want to get married. We do not want to expand. We will eternally remain 5-year-old. And we can go around naked. We can just, you know, roam around wherever we want. Because a 5-year-old doesn't have any, you know, they don't have any sense of a male and a female body. They don't discriminate. They are innocent." So they remained 5 years old and they were moving around. Brahma became extremely angry and he frowned. Like I said, every act of Brahma, every movement of his body creates. And actually, that is true for all of us. Every thought in our mind is a thing, a subtle thing. Every act, every move of the eyebrow is creating something in the universe, because we are ultimately products of Brahma. So when Brahma frowned in anger, what happened? Huh? And in his heart, he was feeling like crying. He's feeling like crying. Why are my sons not listening to me? Why do they want to run away from me? And as he was feeling like crying and angry, from between his eyebrows came Rudra. In fact, he was crying. And because he was crying, he approached Brahma and said, "Please tell me, what is my name? What is my purpose?" And Brahma said, "Because you're crying, your name will be Rudra," which means one who cries. So he was crying. So Rudra said, "Okay, my father, what is the order?" He said, "Go ahead and procreate." Now Rudra is born of ignorance and passion. So his creations, he started creation, but he created beings like his own self, beings who had big bellies and a head which was at the navel, beings who had 5 legs, beings who had long, tall bodies with 1 eye, ghastly beings. In fact, these beings, they started running after Brahma to devour him. Brahma said, "Ah, stop, Rudra. I think you better go and meditate. You better meditate. You sometimes give some service to someone. They are so enthusiastic, but they don't have the right quality." So, anyway, I have some stories to share, but I will not. In this August assembly, I will not mention. But yes, we all have experiences. So Rudra was enthusiastic, but not qualified. So he said, "You go meditate." So Rudra went away meditating. What did Brahma do then? He then created, with firm consciousness, he created 10 beings called the 10 Prajapatis, Marichi and others. The 9th being Daksha, and the 10th was Narada. But Narada was created as an afterthought when he was thinking of Vasudev. So Narada of the 9 again decided, "I will not listen to you, my father. I don't want to procreate. My other 9 siblings will do it for you." So the other 9 became Prajapatis. Actually, technically, Narada is also a Prajapati, Bhagavatam says. So when these 10 were created after that, they said, "Well, you've created us, but you haven't created the circumstances, the instruments with which we can initiate the creation." So he created dharma, adharma. He created lust and greed, Brahma. And when he created lust and greed, after that he thought, "Well, I need to give direction to my sons." And to give direction, you have to speak. So he created speech. Beautiful speech. Beautiful words. Our words are an expansion of ourselves. Right? I was just listening to Srila Prabhupada's class this morning, and one of the conversations he's asking one of his disciples, "What is your name?" And he tells his name. And Srila Prabhupada says, "Now, what is your government name?" So, you know, Prabhupada had these specific words that he would use sometimes, very, very, fascinating. So our words are an expansion of our thoughts and consciousness. So Brahma's beautiful words appeared as a very beautiful girl by the name of Vak, which means speech. In fact, the Sanskrit word Vak, from that you have the Latin word vox, in the word vox populi, the popular opinion, or voice in English, comes from Vak. So Vak is also Saraswati. Saraswati was created. And immediately he became so enamored, he started running behind her, as if he wanted to unite with her. And all the sons, the Prajapatis, were standing there observing, "What is going on? What's wrong with our father? We thought we are the ones who are meant to procreate, but look at him. And he's running after his own daughter. How odd is this?" And then they tell him, they say, "My dear father, no other Brahma has ever done something like this. No other Brahma. And in fact, you yourself, in all the other days of your life, you've never done this in any other kalpa. But what's wrong with you? In this kalpa, you are suddenly attracted to your own daughter and running after her." And to run away from Brahma, Saraswati became a female deer and started running away. And Brahma was so obsessed, he became a male deer and started running behind her. And this is quoted as an example of lust, which is blinding. So once, when they saw him running after Vak, they speak this. Now they speak the verse I mentioned. "My dear father, no other Brahma has ever done this before. And in fact, you've never done this in any of your previous days." You see, what that means is Brahma recreates every day. Just like a shopkeeper. He goes to a shop, puts the shutters down, goes home at night, the following morning wakes up, dresses up and comes back again and opens a shop. Similarly, Brahma opens a shop every day, which is the start of creation. And when he's too tired, wants to take rest, he puts the shutters down. That is the temporary dissolution. So it's cyclical, the creation happens. It's not very long, it only takes some 311 trillion years for a day to pass. And so Brahma does the same thing again and again every day. And these boys, they were saying, "Well, you've never done this before. What's wrong with you? Why are you doing this?" And they became critical of him. But Brahma, who is both the father and the guru, did not take that criticism negatively. Sometimes our own well-wishers can be at hand, very close to you, especially between husband and wife. You know, you find they really know you. They really, really know you. And they can sometimes speak words which are very piercing, but true, true. So we should pay heed to them And we should try and reflect, what is there in me that I need to change? And even a father can be corrected by the sons. This is an example. And even a guru can be corrected by his disciples. Jiva Goswami says in the Sandarbhas, in fact, before one rejects one guru, because the guru has drifted away from the path, one must by all means try to protect him and bring him back to the path. Who should do that? The disciples. One of the synonyms of disciples in the Sanskrit language is chhatra, which also means a student. But it also means an umbrella. An umbrella. What does an umbrella do? An umbrella protects you from a rainy day like this. I wish I had an umbrella this morning. But so disciples can protect their guru. So yeah, you see, the boys are condemning the father's action. The father of all Prajapati is Brahma. Thus seeing all his Prajapati sons speaking in that way, became very much ashamed and at once gave up the body he had accepted. Now the Acharyas are explaining that in Brahma's case, when it is mentioned he gave up his body, it didn't mean that he actually committed suicide or he physically gave up the body. He gave up that intent. He gave up the intent of chasing Saraswati. And his sons were right. He had never done this before in any of the other days. But you know, you can do odd things sometimes. Anyone can. And I was reflecting, how old is Brahma when he did this? And I was thinking, well, we have the calculations in the Shastra. He's 51 years old and one day. So 51st birthday, and the following day is started, and it's around noontime right now for him. This is how old he is. I was thinking maybe he's gone through some midlife crisis. You do odd things when you... Oh, you know, midlife crisis, you know what that is? I'm not quite there yet, but I think what it is. I think you feel regrets. You feel your unfulfilled aspirations trying to catch up on you. You don't know what the future holds, and you can only look at past in one lens: regret. That's midlife crisis. So I was thinking, Brahma never did this, and why did he do it? Oh, maybe midlife crisis. Maybe I'm wrong. That's my speculation. But yeah. I mean, there are many who even give up their good name. They give up their fame, their possessions, everything. They give up everything for something which is so ephemeral, so transitory, so temporary, and they don't realize what they've lost. And sometimes they do it in a shameless way. In fact, lust and shame are not friends. You know why? One who is lusty loses all shame. Because lust cannot survive when there is shame. Ramanujacharya had a disciple who's lusty. Well, he was not lusty after another woman. He was just so much attracted to his own wife that once Ramanujacharya was, you know, out on a procession, the deities were taken out on a procession, and this particular disciple was meant to be assisting with carrying the palanquin of the deities. And he, as he was assisting, you know, if you want to go in that forward direction, you will hold the palanquin like that and you'll move forward. But this gentleman, he was turned behind, because behind the procession were the women, and amongst the women was his wife. So he was going backwards and everyone was laughing at him. They were criticizing him. He couldn't care less. He was not ashamed. Of course, then Ramanujacharya called him and said, and he went to Ramanujacharya with his wife. And he was looking at the wife and talking to Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya said, "Oh, you're so attracted to her. If I show you someone who is more attractive, would you like to see? Would you be interested?" He says, "Yes." And then Ramanujacharya shows him the beautiful deities of Varadaraj. Anyway, sometimes the presence of someone also instigates some thoughts in your mind. In Kripa Mahaprabhu's presence, I had to speak something about Ramanujacharya and his lusty disciple who gave up lust and became a true disciple of Ramanuja. So in this way, the boys are criticizing Brahma. And then Brahma gives up his body, which is shame. Shame. And that shame becomes darkness. The darkness becomes fog. And the fog is distributed in all directions. But it's interesting how a single thought can completely transform the course of one's life. So mind your thoughts. Every thought is a seed. Every seed can germinate. And every germinated seed will ultimately bear fruits. So when you want to catch it at the level of thought. And this is what in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, right at the beginning, chapter 2, verse number 62, we have Lord Krishna telling Arjuna, "Well, before I tell you the entire Bhagavad Gita, let me tell you the psychology of fall down." What does he say? Where does it start? Where does lust start? What does it start with? Anyone? So the verse is, yes, dhyayato vishayan pumsa sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama. So we know how lust develops. What's the psychology? It does not start with us trying to randomly be with someone or do something. It starts with dhyayato vishayan pumsah. Dhyayato. It starts with contemplation. It starts with assigning importance to something. Unless we assign value to something, we will not be interested in it. We could be dressed up as devotees and talk like devotees and walk like devotees. But our minds may be somewhere else completely. If the deeper contemplation is not on the Lord. Externals can be deceiving. It's what is internal, what is the focus that determines where our thoughts will lead us to. So dhyayato means focus. First, the person focuses on something. Oh, I've been a brahmachari for so many years. One brahmachari approached me from the Bhaktivedanta manor. Please don't try to speculate. He said, Prabhu, I have some difficulty. I said, okay, what is the difficulty? He said, I like one Gujarati girl. I said, right. And he said, I know that the congregation mostly knows you. Could you introduce me to that girl? I said, okay, and I would like to get married to her. Okay, and what will you do? How will you survive? Where will you live? What will you earn? And how many children do you want to plan with her? If the answer is none, I think you're better off. He said, no, I would like 5 children. I said, oh, very good. 10 would be better. The more the merrier. And I said, well, how will you survive? He said, well, you know, before I joined the ashram, I was working and doing some odd jobs, and I have £350 in my bank account. I said, Jai, that's something. And what would you do? Where would you live? Oh, I love playing musical instruments and harmonium, and maybe we will move to Vrindavan and I will teach harmonium. There are apparently 100,000 people in Vrindavan who know harmonium. So he's not going to find much of a market. And I said, Prabhu, you might find yourself sitting on Kalia Ghat with your harmonium, surrounded by your poor wife and children, and begging, you know, I don't think this is for you. And he said, how can you say that? He got disappointed. And the following week, he came to me, he said, thank you for giving me a reality check. So marriage is a big thing. The girls should be making sure that the boy is not just a good harmonium player. They should make sure that the boy is having a house, having a job, a stable income, good friends, nice family, all these lists. Yeah, Mandali. She's my daughter's good friend from Australia. And her parents are devotees. She's a very charming little person. So, yeah. I don't usually do this. I'm sorry. I don't mention names. So, yeah. It starts with one uncontrolled thought that changes the course of life. And this has happened before in the Shastra. Someone asked me, well, the real problem in today's day and age, actually, Kripa Mahaprabhu's son-in-law, Namras. I sometimes listen to his podcast. Not very regular. I'm not a YouTuber. And I have no social media accounts. None at all. No Facebook and Twitter and all those things I don't have. But I'm internet shy, but I do watch Namras somehow. And he actually picked up a very nice topic. A topic of corn. He calls it corn. Because C-O-R-N. And you got to, in your mind, substitute the C for a P. P for a papa. He didn't want to be banned from YouTube, so he said, I'm going to call it corn. I said, okay, that's interesting. Never heard that before. But he said, this is you know, an issue which is, in modern day and age, it's everywhere. It's rampant. And I was thinking, well, actually, it's not just modern. It's there since Bhagavatam times. We find in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, first chapter, the very first chapter of the sixth canto, we find the pastime of the story of Ajamil. And what did Ajamil do? Ajamil was going through the forest, doing his own business, collecting firewood, and suddenly he chances upon a prostitute who is half-dressed with her lower garments falling off. Don't worry, I'm not going to be too graphic. Just as far as Bhagavatam goes, Bhagavatam says her lower garment was falling off. And there was this drunk man who was embracing her tightly. And Ajamil just happened to go on his Gmail and something else popped up instead. You know, he was going about his business, collecting firewood, and then here pops up this lusty prostitute with some low-class man embracing her. What happened? Ajamil became so absorbed in the thoughts, dhyayato vishayan pumsa, sangastesho pajayate. He wanted to associate with her, sangha. First contemplation, then the desire to attain, sangha. And the irresistible desire to attain her, sangha, resulted in karma, lust. And as a result of that, Ajamil then, of course we know the rest of the pastime, he marries the prostitute and he has 10 children from her. And at the age of 88, when he's about to die, he calls out Narayan. 88 years old. And his son was only 5, so at 83 he was still, lust is something that never satiates. We have many examples. We have the example of Saubhari Muni in the ninth canto. Saubhari Muni was in the Yamuna and he was doing tapasya. So Ajamil was a knowledgeable person. He was a Brahmana. But his knowledge could not save him. Knowledge alone cannot save us from lust. And Saubhari Muni was a yogi. He was in the Yamuna. And what was he doing? Ninth canto, chapter 6, if you read. He was doing tapasya, sitting not on the banks of the Yamuna. He said, well, the banks are just not too nice. In fact, Dharma Shastras say that a sadhu should not meditate on the banks of a river. Because on the river banks, many people come to take bath, including young women. And that might disturb his mind. So Saubhari said, well, I'm going to go down deep into the Yamuna, on the riverbed. The river's flowing, he's inside, and he's meditating. And while he's meditating, Srila Prabhupada explains, you meditate not with your eyes closed. Once Janakinath Prabhu was doing a yoga session, and my daughter was insistent that we should join the yoga session. So we joined, and he started the yoga session with some nice slow breathing exercise. I don't personally do much yoga. So I started with the breathing exercise, and then Janakinath Prabhu said, okay, now we'll do Shavasana. Shavasana means you just lie down. Slow breathing. And I lied down. And within no time, I was snoring. Snoring. And the whole class burst into laughter. And my daughter tried to wake me up, and I said, 5 more minutes. So, you know, Shobhari was not eyes closed, sleeping, no. Yeah, the eyes have to be open 3 millimeters. 3 millimeters open. So they are open enough so that you can see something. And Shobhari is meditating. And two little fish, a young boy and a beautiful girl fish, they came together, kissing each other, running around each other. You know, have you seen fish dance? It's beautiful. And it so happened, they were doing it right in front of the iris of Shobhari. And Shobhari was observing, ooh, something's going on there. And then they started to mate. And Shobhari said, he opened his eyes wide. He said, what am I doing here? Following Brahmacharya in the Yamuna, doing this tapasya, I'm better off going and getting married. So he immediately emerged out of Yamuna. The king of Mathura at that time was a king named Mandata. And Mandata, he's a very famous king. He had 3 sons and he had 50 daughters. One of his very prominent sons, which we all know about and love, is Ambarish Maharaj. He's son of King Mandata of Mathura. Ambarish Maharaj is also king of Mathura. So Mandata had 50 daughters. And this, have you ever put your hand or finger or, you know, been in a swimming pool for a long time? What happens to your body? Your skin becomes wrinkly. So this man had been in the Yamuna for only around 1,000 years. So he was really wrinkly, his skin falling off. He was looking ugly and walking with a forceful gait. You know, he was just trying to drag himself. And he said, where in this kingdom can I find the most beautiful girls? And he thought of the king. He appeared in the king's court and he said, I would like to marry one of your daughters. The king said, oh, how do I say no to this man? If I say no, he'll curse me. If I say yes, my daughters would be unhappy. So the king is very clever. He says, well, in the matters of marriage, there's no force. My daughters have full freedom to choose their own bridegroom. So they will choose someone for themselves. Mandata said, right, let me go and see them myself, and I'll propose. And he goes and sees the princesses, and the princesses are looking at this ugly man. They really don't even look at him. They're, you know, traumatized, yes. So at that point, Mandata says, well, look, you know, I told you I can't do anything. They've decided. What does Shobhari do? The fruits of his tapasya, which were meant to bring him closer to Krishna, he uses the fruits of those tapasya To do what? To transform himself into a beautiful, smart, dashing young man. And then he approaches these princesses. And the same princesses, they fight over each other to marry marry Saupari. And Saupari says, don't fight, please don't fight. I have a proposal. I'll marry all 50 of you. I am very capable. And that's what happens. He marries all 50 of them until one day, after many, many millennia of enjoying the kingdom with them, he's alone and he realizes, what have I done? For a mere transitory happiness, I have strayed away from the right path. I'll say two more things. I could have said more, but I think, what time do we finish? 8:30. Should I say something more? Because I think I do need to say this, that lust, although is uncontrolled when one tries to control it with knowledge or with renunciation, like in case of Saupari, one who is a devotee does not have to fear, because their minds and hearts are fully absorbed in the Lord. If our minds and hearts are fully absorbed in the Lord, externally, it wouldn't matter. We have an example from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Leela. What chapter? Chapter number? No, Ramananda Rai. Chapter number 5. Chapter number 8. No, not that. Antya Leela, chapter number 5, where Ramananda Rai, so there is a young, simple Brahmana, disciple of, well, follower of Mahaprabhu. His name is Pradyumna Mishra. And Pradyumna Mishra wants to hear Krishna Katha. So he approaches Mahaprabhu. He says, please, Mahaprabhu, speak some Krishna Katha. Mahaprabhu says, what shall I speak? I don't know anything. The person who really knows is Ramananda Rai. Even I listen Krishna Katha from Ramananda Rai. So please approach him. What chapter is this? Antya Leela, chapter 5, I think. It's definitely Antya Leela. So, Yes. Thank you. Chapter 5. After my stroke, I almost lost my memory, but I think it's the stuff that was worth forgetting has been forgotten. So I'm not upset with it. So this gentleman, Pradyumna Mishra, he goes to Ramananda Rai, and when he reaches the house of Ramananda Rai, the servants of Ramananda says, please, my dear sir, please take a seat. Our master, he's busy. Oh, he's busy? What is he busy with? Oh, he's just gone out in the gardens, and he's with two beautiful dancing girls. So in those days, in the Jagannath Puri temple, there used to be temple dancers. These were performers who would perform for the pleasure of Jagannath. They were known as Devadasis or Maharis. So these two young girls, Ramananda Rai was teaching these girls different dance moves to dance on his drama, the Jagannath Vallabha Natakam, that he had composed. And Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, while teaching them how to play the character of the gopis, and in his Amrit Pravaha Bhashya commentary, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that he would first take their clothes off, massage their bodies with oil, with his own hands, then bathe them very wonderfully, sweetly, nicely, and then dress them, put the nice makeup on them. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, just in the mood of the servants of the gopis, considering these two girls who are playing the character of a gopi to be like gopis. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, while he would do that, his mind from the point of lust was just like stone or wood. Had no vikara, no transformation. You see, what happens to the mind when the mind gets stimulated? The mind transforms. In Sanskrit, you call it vikara. There was no vikara, there are no transformations in his mind when he was massaging these girls with oil and bathing them. This is Ramananda Rai. And Mahaprabhu says, like a warning, he says, nobody can understand the mind of Ramananda and nobody should imitate, Srila Prabhupada warns in the purport. But it goes to show that one who is truly absorbed, and then Mahaprabhu actually quotes, anyway, I can go on, 10th canto, chapter 33. So we'll close that thread. I do want to speak one thing about Srila Prabhupada and we'll stop. Srila Prabhupada was in Fisher Mansion. And Ambarish Prabhu and others, they wanted to buy the Fisher Mansion. I think it was 1976. They wanted to buy the Fisher Mansion in Detroit. And the Fisher Mansion originally was built spending $2 million. And it was actually bought by Ambarish Prabhu for $80,000. But anyway, so Fisher Mansion, when Srila Prabhupada entered the Fisher Mansion, it was very ornate, very beautiful. And on the walls, especially on the ceilings, there were large artifacts and frames and paintings from the French Renaissance, which showed liberty, freedom, and the expression of liberty and freedom was, you rip off your clothes and be naked. So you see a lot of expression. Art is an expression. So the expression is by showing women who are half naked and, you know, embracing men and women. All these paintings are there. And Srila Prabhupada is entering inside with his sannyasi disciples and brahmacharis and, you know, they all look at the ceiling and it's beautiful, but they quickly turn their gaze away, the sannyasis and the brahmacharis. And Srila Prabhupada, if you ever look at Prabhupada's walking style, he has a stick and he has a gaze which is high. So with his high gaze, he's looking at these paintings, and although everyone wants to move ahead past that room, Srila Prabhupada is very carefully looking at all the paintings for about 3-4 minutes, really absorbing each painting. And the owner of the Fisher Mansion is excited, explaining each painting. And Srila Prabhupada looks at him when all the other brahmacharis and sannyasis are looking at the floor. Srila Prabhupada looks at the owner of the Fisher Mansion and says, yes, so beautiful, very nicely done. So when the thought, when the absorption is not on the external, is on the internal, is on Krishna, the externals are not seen with an exploitative mindset. So Brahma here reflects back and changes course. Thank you very much. There is no time for questions. I do apologize. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.